Hi everyone, I'd like to welcome you to the AA and Asia Oceania meeting. My name's Brenda and I'm an alcoholic from New Zealand. I'd like to ask for a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. Can I just ask, is Patricia C. from Australia here in the room? She's on the program. And can't pronounce the name, but Kaipo from Palau? Oh. Is he in the room? He's in another meeting? Okay. Oh, he's busy, isn't he? He's not speaking here. Okay. Oh, okay. Oh. Right now, she's having the baby. She's having the baby right now. Cool. Oh, hope it goes well. Okay, so what we'll do is we've got two speakers up here today, and I will ask from somebody else on the floor if we have time. So first speaker is Maseo from Japan.
Hello, everybody. My name is Maseo. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety day is May 10, 1989, and my home group is Sanshiro in Tokyo. And we have a meeting on Tuesday night and Saturday afternoon. This is the way how you introduce yourself in English meeting, right? Because I usually attend Japanese meeting only, and my, you know, English is my second, you know, foreign language. That's why, you know, I get so nervous today to make a speech in second foreign language, you know. You know, I'm very nervous. And I'm nervous. I'm so nervous. At the same time, I'm so grateful to be sober and, you know, sober and sober today. And, you know, I started drinking at the age of 18 when I get into the university back in Tokyo. And even from the very start, I could never ever control my drinking. And I really like the, you know, taste of alcohol. At the same time, I really like the effect of alcohol, you know, because I was, you know, very shy and full of fear of people. And that's why I really like the effect. And, but even though I'm very, you know, shy and how can I say full of fear, I really want to be something, you know, someone, you know, I really want to be outstanding at the same time. Even though, even before drinking, I did have a contradicted personality. That's why I needed some oblivion, to be comfortable with my own skin. And as I told you, I could never ever control my drinking, you know, of drinking. And I drank on and on, and my disease got worse and worse. Even from the, you know, even from the first year of drinking, I had a blackout. And, but at first, blackout didn't matter at all for me because my friend said that. I asked my friend, you know, what I did because I have no memory of it. My friend said it was okay, you know. But after, you know, several years, I asked the same question to my friend, what I did. They said, I would not mention to you, but you should stop drinking right away, you know. But, and it was, you know, that was much better because, you know, after 8 years of drinking, continuous drinking, almost everything, you know, after fourth or fifth year, I started drinking every single day, you know, and I became more and more lonely, and you know, I forgot what to say. I stuck for words quite often. As I told you, I'm speaking in the second foreign language. You know, I'm full of fear of making mistakes, you know, because I really want to be perfect. That's why I needed alcohol. Today, even though I'm making a lot of mistakes in grammatical and how can I say, in grammar and pronunciation in English, I don't care at all, you know. This is, you know, thanks to the 12 step. And, as my the disease got worse, my, how can I say, situation of living got much, much worse, you know, day by day. That's why I thought that it might be the problem, not with me, but for the, you know, something is wrong with my university. That's why I got a, you know, I got a scholarship to study in Australia, and I went to one of the good universities in Melbourne, but nothing got better because I kept on drinking. And actually, the beer in Australia was quite nice. And also, thanks to tariff, you know, thanks to Commonwealth tariff, you know, the whiskey was quite cheaper. Scotch whiskey was quite nice and cheap, you know, in Australia. That's why I was like a vegetable. I could do nothing but drinking in Australia. And the life was like hell in Australia, even though I went to a good university. And, you know, the life was so bad. But, you know, that was my God intervention that, you know, I could go to Australia because I met, you know, a friend who is an NA member. I shouldn't talk about outside matters, because, but, you know, I met an NA member, and that's the way I could get to know about the 12-step program. Because in Japan, 12-step program, including AA, is not accepted, you know, how to say, it's little known. That's why it's a miracle for me to, you know, I believe in God's intervention that I could go to Australia and meet a friend who is doing the 12-step program. And I was thinking of, you know, getting a degree in Australia, but, you know, as I told you, I could do nothing but drinking in Melbourne. That's why I went back to Japan. And luckily, one of my friends knew about AA, and he called me. Every time he called me, I was drunk. That's why he said to me that you should go to AA. And I went to AA, not out of, you know, I didn't want to stop drinking at all at the time. I went to the first meeting out of curiosity only, you know, because my friend was doing, you know, NA, and she talked about NA sometime. That's why I was interested about the 12-step program. But, the first meeting did work, even though, you know, I went there out of curiosity. And because I was overwhelmed by the rigorous honesty of the members, you know. I was really, really overwhelmed by the meeting. I mean, especially the honesty of the people there. And the meeting, you know, my willpower didn't work. Even for half a day before coming to AA, I could never, ever, you know, stop drinking by my own will. But first meeting did work. And the first meeting was, as I told you, what is my, you know, sobriety date? May 10th, 1989. And since then, you know, I've been sober, even though I'm not that happily ever after. And, you know, at first, you know, even though I was overwhelmed by the rigorous honesty by the members, I didn't like the people, you know, because I was still in the university. But I found, you know, I thought that, you know, AA is for old, how can I say, people. People. That's why I didn't like the meeting. That's why first a couple of months I didn't go to a meeting on a regular basis. I just went to the, I made it only two or three times a month, you know. That's why, even though I was sober, my depression became worse and worse. That's why, you know, I tried to commit suicide, but I'm so, how can I, scared to, you know, kill myself. I tried to climb up on the tall building, but I have a sort of, fear of height. That's why, you know, I changed my mind, and I tried to cut my wrist, but it was so painful. That's why I had no way of, you know, killing myself. That's why, you know, I had no choice other than going, you know, going back to the meeting. And after that, I really get to love other AA members, right? Not, you know, same AA member. And I tried to feel that, you know, trying the difference, because the disease is so horrible, you know, because it's hard for me to accept this disease at the age of 26. I was, you know, I thought that I was too miserable to accept this disease at the age of 26. But, you know, I found a good way of thinking. You know, this disease is, I was told that this disease is a disease of perception, right? That's why I was told that, you know, one day at a time, you know, that idea, you know, was very effective to me, because if I thought that, you know, I have to quit drinking forever at the age of 26, that is, you know, depressing to me. But for 20 hours, I can do that, you know, one day at a time. And I began to like AA members, you know, more and more. At first, even though I make a speech at AA meeting, first several meetings, I just said my name. I just said, I'm Masayo, that's all. But after a few months, I tried to say that I'm Masayo alcoholic. Yeah, I could identify myself as an, you know, alcoholic after several months. I think I was desperate enough to accept that I'm an alcoholic. And I was lonely enough to, how can I say, to love other AA members. Otherwise, you know, it's hard for me to accept this disease, you know, because this disease is, you know, too cunning and baffling. Not okay. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Yeah, that's, thank you. Because I usually read big books in Japanese. And I've been sober ever since, but as I told you, it's happily ever after. It's not a story for me, you know. 2 years ago, my mother got sick, was old and got sick, and 3 months ago, I was sacked for my office that I worked for 12 years, and 2 months ago, my father got old and sick. But I think, you know, hardship made me, you know, I think, you know, I can grow spiritually by the hardship only. Otherwise, my ego will be, you know, inflating, you know, without any limit. I think I can learn a lot more by the hardship. I realized that, you know, before the hardship, you know, I thought that I was reliant on God and 12 step. But I realized that I was so, how can I say, dependent on my parents economically and emotionally. And I thought I could realize that I was so reliant on money, but, you know, thanks to those, you know, hardships, I could realize the importance of, how can I say, reliance on God. That's why, especially, my unemployment was, you know, was also another God intervention of God, you know, because I think I could, yeah, by the unemployment, I can have much more time and energy for myself and for my parents, because I did so many, you know, terrible things to my parents, and that's why I can, you know, it is such a blessing for me to have much more time and energy for my parents and for myself. I think that's it for me. Thank you, everyone, for letting me share.
Thanks, Masayo. And we'll have John from Thailand, please.
Hi, everybody. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad to be here. And in Thai, so with the cop, I'm too John Ben Kum Ki Mao the cop. That was a little Thai. I wish I could use the excuse of language. I guess I'm going to be at this level. Oh, there we go. Okay. My home group is the Phuket group in Phuket, Thailand. And the guy last night at the meeting, he has never been there, so he doesn't know that Phuket group is the best group in AA. My first day of sobriety is November 6, 1989, and with the power greater than myself, my higher power, Program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the fellowship, I've been sober since that day. And I am truly grateful to be here today. I had the great honor last night to bring in the flag, the Thai flag, and it was the spirit and the camaraderie amongst the people, the flag bearers beforehand, was It was just a very powerful experience to be amongst all those people from all those countries. And the guy said, okay, let's go. We're ready to start, ready to go out. And somebody said, wait, we got to pray. So we all held hands and said a prayer and said the serenity prayer, and then we were able to go out. So my first recollection of my first drink was I was 9 years old. I grew up in the east coast of North America in the United States, and it's cold winter days. We would go out and play in snow, my sister and myself, and we'd come into the house, and my mom would give us a little tiny shot glass of red wine to warm us up after we got in the house. And I can remember one time, I had the glass, and my sister and my mom left the kitchen. And I opened up the refrigerator, reached back. I can still see that shape of that square bottle. Reached back in the corner, took the cap off, and took a good chug-a-lug on that bottle. I knew two things. I loved the effect of it. It felt great, and it was wrong. And that followed me probably through the rest of my drinking career. It was 30 more years before I found this program. I found it earlier, at an earlier time. I drank all through high school and somehow managed to get through college and started a job. Barely got through, but I got through and got a job. I was a teacher in Alabama and then moved to Alaska. A little geographic. I grew up in New Jersey, moved to Alabama, and then Alaska. I moved to Alaska, and pot was legal, and the bars were open virtually 24 hours a day. They had to close 1 hour a day, but it didn't have to be the same hour. It was paradise. It was paradise. And they paid me a lot more money than they were paying me in Alabama. Drinking became a real problem. I started to miss work, and I started to have some serious work issues and some health issues about my drinking. And I knew I had a problem. I went through a few girlfriends, and it was always as a result of alcohol. They don't like it when you're invited to a wedding and you sit in the wedding cake, or you knock over the Christmas tree, and those kind of little things that they get upset about. They don't want their boyfriends doing that. So there weren't many women in Alaska to begin with, and I ran all of them that I could get a hold of off, so I wasn't very smart either. But I asked to go into treatment. I was teaching, and I asked to go to treatment because I knew I had a problem. And I went down to treatment in Seattle, and in that treatment hall in the treatment center, I learned a lot about the disease of alcoholism. I gained all this information. I had a tremendous sense of information. They brought me to an AA meeting. And we walked in, the bus, the treatment bus came in, and we all piled off. And we walked into this meeting and sat in the back, and there were a bunch of old people sitting around there with gray hair talking about happy, joyous, free, and they mentioned God an awful lot. And I said, I can't do this. These people this is the 1980s. These guys, they were talking about 50s. When I was a little kid, they don't know what life is like today. So, I had too much pride, and I didn't accept the program. I white knuckled it for a couple of years. I finished the treatment, so I white knuckled it for a few years, and regained all my graces in the school. It's a small community in Alaska. Regained my respect from the community and my coworkers and the administration. And the governor at the time was trying to put together a package to send people to set up exchange schools with Asian schools, because at that time the Japanese, well, not at that time, but we noticed it at that time that the Japanese were killing us in math and sciences. So, they thought maybe we should set up some exchanges. So I went over to Japan, and I made it through Japan, set up all these interviews and at different school systems, and went through all the ones in Japan and did not drink. I was still white-knuckling it, miserable, absolutely miserable. Didn't realize how miserable I was until a little later on. I got to Korea and turned out, had a, met everybody, the mayor of the town and all the, bigwigs of the school system. And we went out for dinner that night, and they said, we're going to have a toast for this, celebration of this unity over our two school systems. And I said, no, I can't drink, thanks. And they asked me again. I said, no, I can't, thank you, but I can't. I'm allergic to it, or it makes me sick or something. And finally they said, come on. And I said, Well, okay. It was, I've never seen a glass this small since. It was the tiniest little glass on this long stem. I mean, it was really, really small. I figured it can't hurt me. I had it, you know, I threw it down. That night afterwards, the principal and the school board, one of the people on the school board and I went to a strip club, you know. Had a couple beers, you know, things were okay. I handled it, was all right. Next thing I know, I was in Hong Kong, and I was out and had a couple beers in Hong Kong with a couple people I met there. Next thing I know, I was blind drunk again, you know. That all the information in the world did not help me. You know, I needed something else. And, you know, it took me about 2 more years of drinking to realize it. And I did most of my drinking in Thailand. Obviously, I'm not Thai, but I lived there 13 years. And, you know, I hit hard, real hard in Thailand 1 year, the second year after that trip. And bounced off the bottom and managed to crawl back to Alaska. And I made it to November. And I went back to the same treatment center. And this time I did not take any notes. You know, I didn't get any more information. All I did was listen to these people, and they said, you got to go to AA. And I went, I don't like you people, but I'll go, you know. And that's what happened. I went back to Ketchikan, and 1736 Water Street, walked in the door, and a guy reached out his hand, and he said, welcome. You know, and I just kept going back to that meeting. And, you know, at that time, that was the best meeting. And, you know, I sobered up and finished my career in Alaska. I regained everything and moved to Thailand, and now that's where I live. And I have an absolutely wonderful life today, and I've been granted so many gifts by this program. One of the gifts I was granted was that we are right now, AA in Asia is booming. You know, in Thailand, it is absolutely exploding. When I moved there 13 years ago, there was 5 meetings in 5 different locations around the country. You know, 1 meeting in each of the cities, the major tourist cities. And when I left just back in May, there were 40 different venues around the country that were English-speaking or Scandinavian language-speaking, whether it's Swedish or Norwegian, or there's some German meeting-speakings. But the biggest growth that we've seen in the last 5 years, there were no Thai language meeting speakings. And now there's 18 Thai language speaking meetings around the country. It's very, very exciting to be part of this growth. I mean, it's extremely exciting. It's also, we both set up a service structure, so it also gives me a chance to learn how to deal with patience, tolerance, love, and understanding. There's a lot of growth in the expat community. People come from all over the world. So the ideas of how they do it in Sweden and the way they do it in England and the way they do it in Australia is not the way they did it in Ketchikan, Alaska. And, you know, for us to try to get that to all work out sometimes is a chance to practice patience, tolerance, and love. And now we have the Thai community coming in, and we have some literature. And, you know, of course, they want to rewrite the big book. You know, this God thing. They had a real hard time with the God thing as well. But they've managed to find a common solution, a common word for their God. And it's not of religious connotation, which is nice. And it's a wonder to see, to watch the whole process happen. And I feel so fortunate to be able to be a part of this. I was fortunately, I attended the first Thai business meeting. And there were 18 different groups represented. And I had a man on my side that would help translate some of the things I didn't understand when they were talking, because they were from different parts of the country. So there's different accents and different accents. And different language in some cases. And about an hour and a half into the meeting, I find out what some guy suggests. Shouldn't we have a chairperson? The meeting's on, starts on time, you know, ends on time, and, you know, here's the agenda, we worked through it. And these people have been sitting there for an hour and a half with no agenda, no chairperson. It was just discussing how things are going to, you know, that's, for me, that took a lot of tolerance not to go absolutely crazy, you know, but that's the way it's going to happen. It's not my time, it's in God's time. And, You know, I've learned that here. You know, it used to be my way or the highway. You know, if you didn't like what I was doing, either get out of my way or get out of my life. You know, and now I know I need you. I need every one of you in my life in order to stay happy. You know, in order for me to be happy, I have to be sober. So, you know, I'm active in service, both in my home group. You know, I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. I have, when I first came in, Gus used to tell me that I need all three legs of the triangle to be active in my life. You know, I need the recovery. I need the unity. I need to be working with people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to be supporting the members of my group and supporting the other groups around me. And, you know, I need the service. I have to be of service. I started out, you know, emptying the ashtrays and washing them out and doing the cups. And just this last February, I was nominated or elected to the area chairperson of Thailand. And it's been, you know, a wonderful opportunity for me to travel around Thailand and to meet people and to get different, you know, ideas of how things should be and how they think things should be. And it's just been a wonderful experience. And Buzz used to always tell me, you know, my biggest problem is I never know when to keep my mouth shut, you know. So I'll follow his advice now and say thank you. I'm glad to be here, glad for this opportunity, and glad to be alive. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Has Patricia C. from Australia come into the room at all? Who's on the program? Okay, well, keeping with that theme, I'd like to ask, I've only met her 2 minutes ago, Robin from Australia, if you'd like to come up and share. And while she's working her way here, I'll just tell you that Australia is a small continent off the coast of New Zealand. And it's our cousins here. And Robin is my sponsor's first sponsor, so now I know where she got it from.
Yeah, I'm Robin. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And I certainly owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here beaten in all areas of my life. I was dying, and I didn't even know that. You know, I was never been one of those kids who could be told anything. I knew everything. What, you know, it's like, and I still think I know everything, you know. But today, I know there's a higher power in my life, you know, and I know there's a God that saved me from all the stuff. I was a wild alcoholic for a long time. You know, I started drinking when I was 16. I never put it down again till I was 44. And it was like I never missed much. I was there in all of it, you know. If you couldn't see me, you could hear me. You know, I was one of those ones that I had to be heard. But since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've learned that I don't have to prove a thing. I don't have to prove anything to anybody. I learned from the big people, you know, the people who came before me, that I'm all right the way I am. God only made one of me, thank God. And he only made one of us, because if he made two, one wouldn't be necessary. So, you know, and God's got pickable manners, you know, that he waits till he's asked to be invited into your life. And, you know, I had to invite him in at 10 years sober because I was going to die. I was just going to die. Because I was one of those ones that thought black and white. You know, I had to do a lot of service. You know, people, you know, wouldn't even be nice to me. They said, just go do that, Robin. When I first got here, I never spoke to people. I growled at them. They used to say, and I used to say to them, well, what else do you want? I'm sober, aren't I? They said, you better get sober in the head, you know, because I was growling a lot, you know, because I thought I knew everything because I could drink. If you'd asked me about drinking, I know exactly what to do about that. But when I had to come and started relating to people, it's so scary when you think about it. I had no people skills. I've learned it all here. People have taught me through coming to AA, doing the steps. I have to do the steps. I have to do the service. You know, I heard somebody say that they did the ashtrays and they washed up and did sandwiches. And I used to say to people, why do I have to do this? Somebody has to do it. You do it. You know, it's like somebody has to do this. You know, and my first sponsor says I had to dress up, shut up, and just front up. You know, just front up. And I said, I had to front up. She actually told me to mind my own business in a lot of things. You know, she taught me how to mind my own business. You know, I didn't know what was my business and what was everybody else's. I told everybody everything, you know. I had to pull my head in, you know. So it's like, I think this program has taught me to grow up. I'm probably the person I should have been if I hadn't a drank, you know. And this is my third world convention. And this is my, you know, it's like they say to me, you go to any length. You go to any lengths to get a drink. So I go to any lengths to stay sober. You know, it's like God is kind to me. You know, I live in Sydney, Australia, and I have a home group. I've been a secretary. I started this meeting at the Salvation Army because, you know, I wouldn't have done any of this when I was drinking. Don't get me wrong. If it wasn't anything in for me, I certainly wouldn't be doing it. You know, if they weren't going to give me something, I wouldn't do it. But these days I've learned the more I do, the better I feel. You know, the more I do for others, the better I feel inside. You know, it's like God does for me what I can't do for myself, but he certainly doesn't do stuff that I can do for myself. You know, it's like, you know, I live in Redfern of Sydney, and it's an Aborigine, and they think I'm one of them. You know, because I just walk. I can remember last week, they asked me for a dollar, and I said, do you got a dollar? You know, they said, have you got a dollar? I said, have you got one for me? And they said, you're cheeky. You're a cheeky bitch. And I said, that's me. That's me. So I've been set free. This program has set me free to be me. You know, for the first time, I don't have to prove anything to anybody. You know, God is doing for me what I can't do for myself. You know, I can remember coming over here and I think, because I've been diagnosed with an aneurysm, I thought, I'll get halfway across and I'll have a stroke, you know, and I won't even know I've been here. But that's the way it is, you know, that's the way it is. It's like, I'm not going to stop living because, you know, I have a little aneurysm. That's not going to stop me, you know. That's not going to stop me. I've been through worse drinking than I have sober, you know. Nothing can hurt me any worse than drinking again, you know. My past will become my future if I even picked up, you know, one drink. You know, and, you know, I wasn't even prepared to share today, but I'm glad I did, because I know God had a plan. God has a plan for all of us, you know, and it's just, I only have to set. This morning I was so pissed off. So pissed off, because I've been walking my little legs off, you know. You know, because I get lost and I get frantic and do all this, but it turned out to be okay, you know. I turned out, it's okay. I had to calm down. You know, this is it. Nothing else I can do. Can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, when I sponsored Nolene and I actually looked at Nolene and I thought, I've never seen anybody exactly like me. And she's dark and I'm fair. We looked like we had peas in a pot, because she thought in black and white and so did I. You're right or you're wrong. And then I've learned over the years there's got to be a lot of grey areas in this life. You can't think just black and white. And this fellowship, you know, when I say the third step prayer, it sets me free from me. It's just me. I'm the problem. I've always been the problem. You know, I'm the one who goes out and gets myself into a lot of trouble. But if I, like, I've learnt to keep my mouth shut. I can think what I like, but I can't say it out of my mouth. Once it's out of my mouth, I've got to apologise all the time. I was apologising to people I really didn't even like, you know. You know. I really didn't even like them, but I had to apologize because I was wrong. You know, I've learnt, I'll finish on this, I've learnt, if I've lost my cool, I'm wrong. Because it's in me. It's in me. This shit is in me. You know, it's like, if I'm thinking you're wrong, I'm wrong. You know, because we're both all on the same wavelengths most of the time. And it's like, I've just learnt that I have a wonderful life. I've never realised that how wonderful, and I've learnt to count my blessings. I count my blessings. You know, I'm running up and down this highway today thinking I'm nearly 70 years old and nearly halfway across the world, you know, and if I'm going to have a stroke, this today would have been the day. Because I was stressed, I'm telling you. I reckon my head would have blew off if it could have, you know, so I'm a stress head. Doesn't mean to say I have to keep calm. I've learnt that I have to keep calm, you know, and this fellowship has calmed me down so much. And I want to thank you for letting me share. It's a privilege, and thank you very much.
Thanks, Robin. Hope you all noticed the difference in the accents. It's Australia, this is New Zealand. They're very different. I'm really lousy at geography, but I know that India is in the Asia-Oceania zone, and I can't remember your name, I'm sorry. We served together at the World Service, yeah. But I can't remember your name, sorry. Would you like to share?
Sunil,
that's right.
Friends, I'm Sunil, I'm an alcoholic, sober today by the grace of God and all you guys sitting out there. I've been great, I've been wonderful, and I thank Brenda to give me this opportunity to talk to you guys. I come from a relatively large continent, I would say, a subcontinent, I would put it that way, and we are 1.2 billion people, and we are very, very few in A as compared to the population we have, just about 30,000 A members are in the overall population of 1.2 billion, and we really need a lot of help from all you guys. The stadium thing which I saw yesterday, I really want to take help from all you guys and repeat it in India in my lifetime. That's my vision, that about 50, 60,000 people in one place. It's very, very powerful. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I am a part of the AOSM, Asia Oceanic Service Meet, and I've done my 2 tenures there, and I'm representing India this time for the World Service Meet, and plan to learn a lot and pick up a lot of information which I can, and experience which I can take back to my country and share at that level. I sobered up on 14 January 94. My very first meeting, I don't know what happened, how it happened, but I got it straight. I understood what was wrong with me and didn't have to pick up a drink. My home group is from Chandigarh, welcome group. And that's the best group for me. I won't say that's the best group in the world, but that's the best group for me. I don't find anything more important or more religious or auspicious for me. I've got a sponsor, I've done my steps, and the A in India is just exactly the same. There's no difference. It's amazing. Different languages, different cultures, but air means the same, the warmth, the glow, the hugs, and I come precisely for all that here, 10,000 miles away from my country, and I bring you wishes of 1.2 billion people, and I'd like to mention here that we don't have many women alcoholics in India because of cultural issues there, and last time also one of the speakers in the Toronto convention asked for help, and there were a few great ladies who had come all the way, spent all the money and all the time, and stayed in India for relatively longer periods of time and helped us to, you know, start some kind of women There are women alcoholics. We don't see women don't drink. Women do drink, but they drink and die in the closed doors because culturally we are a very close society. A man won't like me to go to his wife in 12 step. He won't accept that. He will see let her die in, you know, because of various issues. So we need help, a lot of help there. If any one of you can come in, you're most welcome. We're having this international, we're trying to repeat an international convention in Goa in November. This year I've got some brochures, so put them up. You can correct them later from the meeting from me. And we are hosting the next AOSM also, Asia Oceanic Service Meet, in my hometown. And for that I'm grateful to AOSM to give us that huge opportunity, because our vision is that India has to play a larger role in our area of subcontinent, because we don't have in Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Tibet, Pakistan, all those countries, we don't have anything much there. We are really envisaging that we play a larger role. Ceylon, we there. And we are doing very well in India. We've got 23 official languages, and we've got the big book in 18 different languages already. You know, if my figures are not wrong, there are about 200 licenses, which translation license which AAWS has issued, and India has got a claim, I think, about 120 or 118 out of them. That's pretty large, you know. So language is a very, very big issue. Education is a very big issue. Culture is a very big issue. I also can't understand more than two languages out of 23. You know, I can't communicate with my people there. Culturally, we are very, very different. It's a huge continent, a subcontinent there. But A is wonderful, and it's a question of language of the heart. Again, I would thank Brenda for letting me speak. And I invite all of you to come to India and experience India firsthand. It's different. You can't read about it. You can't watch about it. You have to come and experience it. And I invite all of you to be there whenever you can. We are all there for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Sunil. That's about the extent of my geography knowledge. I think Russia's in the zone. Is anybody from Russia in the room? Hope. Okay, Wendy from Hamilton, New Zealand, would you like to share?
Hi everyone, my name's Wendy and I'm an alcoholic, and I haven't had a drink today. That's a big deal. I didn't realise I'd be coming up here to share. Thank you for that, Brenda. I'm having a bad day again. Yesterday wasn't much good either, because when I planned this trip in early sobriety several months ago, it was going to be a good opportunity to have a drink because nobody would know. Now, I don't want to drink. Like the gentleman at the big meeting last night said, you know, I don't want to drink, but I want to drink. I keep thinking about it. But I'm getting better. That fellowship helped me yesterday. I got a big hug from someone and spoke to them once, and I've been to meetings and I'm doing everything that's suggested, and it's coming right. I'll get through it with the fellowship. I'll get through it. And I think I'll come out better on the other side too, because it almost feels like I've stopped digging, you know. All right, how it was. I've always been an alcoholic. I was raised in an English pub. My parents were both alcoholics, and I wanted to drink. Everybody drank, and I wanted to. So I nagged them and nagged them until one Sunday lunchtime, I was nine, they gave me a bottle of cider, and I loved it. And I wanted more. And they said, no, you can't have another bottle, Wendy. Yeah. So I stole one out of the bar, I think. I loved it right from the beginning. And I could never drink a little bit. I always drank to get drunk. Always. And I carried on doing that until I first called out to AA when I was in 1987. So, you know, I was drinking from 9 to 30-something years old, very alcoholically. I'm an alcoholic. When I drink at all, I start to say and do and be terrible things. I'll drink so much I fall asleep and wake up and need more. Or I'll drink so much I just pass out and come to, and I can't remember what the hell happened, and I'll need more. Or I'll go into a coma, and by some miracle I've never choked on my own vomit or anything like that, but when I come to, I haven't got a clue what time of day it is, where I am, where I've been. I have to check the call minder on the phone, see where the car's in the garage, look, wonder where the bruises came from. So that's what happens when I drink. That's what happens to me. I just drink and drink. I get this terrible compulsion and craving and unstoppable desire for more. Nothing I can do about it. towards the end, I really didn't like it at all. And the other side of it is that even though I know that just that one tiny wee drink will set that whole awful train in motion, make my life completely unmanageable, wreck me, I'll still pick it up one day, somewhere, somehow. I might have planned it, or it might just happen. But over 25 years of trying to recover, I've relapsed more times than I can remember. And I know what it's like. And I had no mental defence. Here's going up. Just like it says in the big book. Here's how. I'll show you. Yeah. And off I'd go. The longest time I've ever been sober was when I put myself on antabuse. So it was 10.5 months, writing to the Loners Internationalists in a remote place called Vanuatu. But I drank on antabuse. Don't recommend that to anybody. So, you know, that's how powerful it is. Imagine, you know, and but I'm happy to report that just a few days ago, I celebrated 18 months of continual sobriety. And I'm so rapt about that because it's sobriety. I'm actually very comfortable. I haven't got a craving to drink today. I'm just keep thinking about it. But I'm an alcoholic and I've been drinking all my life. It'll go away and it's going to be pretty good when it does, I think. Yeah, something to look forward to. So what happened was, yeah, I was desperate. I was in Vanuatu. I called out to my alcoholic sister in England on the other side of the world and said, help! And she said, right. And 2 weeks later, a big book arrived in her shoebox, a cardboard shoebox. And I grabbed onto that and wrote to the Loners and started my journey to recovery 25 years later. We started up AA in Vanuatu. We had four at a meeting once. None of us stayed sober for any length of time, but we had AA. I went to the hospital and found some poor person. And it was quite a story. But then I met my current husband, and he was from Hamilton, New Zealand. We came to Hamilton, and I carried on drinking. I went to AA in 94, I think. I didn't like the meetings. But just in this last year and a half or so, I hit my bottom. I ended up in treatment, falling down, cranking my head open, A&E, all the yets, you know, coming at me thick and fast. And paradoxically, you know, I've just had the most successful career. I've heard it shared at other meetings here. I've had the most paradoxical, successful career in my life, independent, despite being a raging alcoholic. It's weird. I don't understand it. So, I'm a GSR at my local group in Hamilton. I love AA meetings. I love going to AA because it's the only thing that works for me. When I get up in the morning, I take the first, second and third steps. I say the Lord's Prayer, the Serenity Prayer. I hand over and I just plan things out and hope that I'll be able to get through the day without picking up a drink. And when I've asked and it's been said, yes, that's okay, I know that I will, come what may. And just, you know, if I remember or don't fall asleep first, I'll say thanks at the end of the day. And I just do it one day at a time because that's all I can do. Any more than that, I'm stuffed. So one day at a time, I'm getting better at it. Yeah, so I'm comfortable in sobriety. It's just, it's bloody alcoholism just sits there all the time, sort of, it's like this bug, you know. I wish it would just go away, but, it, you know, I have faith that one day at a time it will. And thanks for asking me to share. Thanks.
Thanks, Wendy. Is Paul O here from Australia? He said he was coming.
We have a guy from Vietnam, JP.
Do we have a guy from Vietnam? Is that in the zone, is it? Yes. Good. Who's the guy from Vietnam? Yes. All right. Guy from Vietnam. Sorry, I don't
know your name. My name's JP and I'm an alcoholic. And I was born in Hong Kong. I'm French, educated in England. And I got sober in Los Angeles. Okay, that's over with. And by the grace, and only by the grace of a loving higher power, have I been sober since 21st of August 1989. And you know, and when I first came to this country, I absolutely hated America. I was educated in England for 10 years at boarding school, and to add to this, you know, the sense of inferiority, you know, the fear of people. When I first came to America, I just hated that people could be open and talk honestly about how they felt. you know, I went to 3 treatment centers, and, you know, and I only really got sober when I heard the message from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I tried everything they told me to do at the treatment centers, and I still relapsed. I'm one of the hopeless alcoholics. I have no defense against the first drink. The only thing that has kept me sober is my higher power and doing what's in the 3 sides of the triangle. I've been very graced because, and I know my friend Jaime there who volunteered me to speak today. He likes hearing about this because he witnessed a lot of this. My first 4 step, I had 500 resentments. And that was just the main resentments, because each resentment had sub-resentments. I remember my mother, I had, I think, 52 sub-resentments. Took me a year to write. I wrote every day, except for one day, and that day was, you know, I was physically so tired I couldn't write. My 5th step with my sponsor, it lasted about a month. It happened in Los Angeles and also in Arizona and then again in Los Angeles. It took Jaime and I an hour to burn my resentment. We did it in a park. You know, I mean, it was stacks of paper. And my first amend was actually to the park because the rubbish bin was so hot that we melted it. My first set of amends, I had over 150 amends on most continents. And it took me a year to finish every single one of them. And it's only, you know, through the grace of a loving higher power that I was able to go through those experiences. I'd like to take credit for the work that was done, but really it wasn't me. So, 21 years on, I moved to Vietnam, a little bit about Vietnam now. I moved to Vietnam 15 years ago, and when I went there, I didn't know there was a fellowship. Actually, there wasn't a fellowship. There was one gentleman called John from Australia, and he was showing up at a place by himself for, I think, 2 years. And then I finally found that there was a loner there, and then the two of us got together, and I guess that was the first AA meeting in Vietnam, and there were 2 of us for, you know, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years, and then more people started to come, and I was joking with my friends the other night that we've had tremendous and explosive growth in Vietnam. We're now 10 of us, and it's And I can tell you it's really a big deal. You know, it really is a big deal because 15 years ago, it was John and I on a Monday night. And if I was traveling, there was no meeting. You know, today there's 10 of us, but there's a meeting every day. And that really makes a difference. And we have visitors from all over the world. It's great. It's always very refreshing to have visitors. The nice thing about our meetings is you can't really hide in them. I'm really grateful to be here, and I'm very grateful to my higher power. Thank you.
Would one of the Australian blokes like you? I don't know. Somebody's pointing. Are you an Australian bloke? Poland. Good. Is that in the zone? Doesn't matter. Come on up. Come on up, man from Poland.
Poland. My name is Gabriel. I am alcoholic. Sorry for my English. I think I speak awful. Sorry. I come from Poland in Central Europe, from city Olsztyn, in northeast Poland. I'm very happy to be with you. It's my first convention, and it's my first time in USA. I'm very happy when I meet people from AA, from other countries. It's a great pleasure to me. I come from Poland a week ago and traveled to San Antonio by car from New York. I think the America is a beautiful country. I think it's all. I'm very happy to be with you in San Antonio.
Still got space for an Australian bloke? Yep. Does he look Australian?
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. My name's Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. Hello, everybody. It's just kind of overwhelming to be here. I'm first time in America, in the US of A. Thank you. I have an affiliation with America. I was born on the 4th of July, so I turn 49 tomorrow, and yeah, you'd look older than that if you had my life too, but you'd be dead already. But yeah, I went hard from a young age. I've come from Central Australia, or Central Queensland, on the place called Charleville. My father was from Ireland, and he was a flying doctor in Australia, a very famous flying doctor, and he married my mother after his first wife died in a plane accident with him when he arrived from Ireland in the flying doctor service, and that became a very famous accident in the flying doctor service. And 10 years later, he met my mother, who was driving around Australia in a Volkswagen with her friend, and they got together and had four of us in quick succession, being Irish Catholic alcoholic. I can see the blue eyes and the crooked bottom teeth there. There's a few of you out there. Yeah. But anyway, so my mum was an alcoholic, and she was off Irish stock as well, and my father was a morphine addict, and he was able to get the morphine because he was a flying doctor, and he was shooting up four times a day into his belly with the morphine. He had the good gear. And as a result, the four of us basically became alcoholic drug addicts. And my sister, who's not here today, she's over at the lesbian and gay meeting, but we're both sober today. And it's a wonderful thing to have a sibling in the fellowship, and it's just one of God's great gifts to me to have a sister in the fellowship. And we have brothers both sides, north and south, elder and younger, who are still out there, tried AA and didn't like you people. I didn't like you either, but, I didn't like anything about AA. But I was very blessed because it's great I could get up here because John has been a big part of my recovery. I live in Phuket. I'm a sailor by trade. I'm a mariner, and I got a job to deliver a sailing boat to Thailand in 1987 after the movie Dead Calm. It was one of Nicole Kidman's first movies, and I was on that set and got the job to deliver that boat to Thailand. And I ended in Phuket in 1987, and we dropped the anchor, and I got on the piss. And, drugs are a part of my story. I wouldn't have had any, but if I knew I was going to be speaking here today, I wouldn't have touched them. But they're a big part of my story. And I know that little blue card gets around, but you've got to tell the truth, I think, and, I used to mix them up a bit and try and get that steady rising glow, And, of course, after a while, I couldn't manage and maintain that like the rest of you. I can see a few heads nodding. And it used to be all over the place like a mad woman's poo. So what got me in the end was I ended up in an AA meeting because my wife was going to leave me. And I had three children, and she was an Australian girl from Grafton, still is. I'm still married. I'm one of those rare breeds that still got the woman that they married through alcohol. You know, like through alcoholism, our relationship has survived. And we've had another child since then. We're blessed with four beautiful children, all born and bred in Thailand. And I do digress, because I went to my first meeting in Phuket. It was a bit of a debacle. There was a bunch of guys that got sober in Amsterdam. And they were all there doing this phone, what do you call them, boiler room boys or whatever you want to call them, and they're sort of shouting out a line, and there was crosstalk, and there was a chairman who was kind of angry at everybody, and John seemed to be the only one there that's kind of had his head on straight. So after the meeting, I said to him, like, mate, you know, this drinking, I just want to, you know, I didn't even know this abstinence thing, you know, like, if I'd have known that, I would never have fronted up. No way. I mean, that's a bit, you know, what about a wine with dinner, or, you know, a beer after work on a hot day, you know? But I said, I don't know which one's got the bomb in it, mate. You know, I don't know which one's got the bomb in it. I needed that advice. So sometimes, you know, I can drink a whole bottle and the last little bit, you know, it'll just get me, you know? Or I'd have a few beers and then, you know, I was on a clock, about a 4 to 6 week clock, and I could drink normally. Well, what I considered normally was probably not everybody else's normally. But then I'd go on a tear, you know, I'd get the tourist, I'd get the Irish tourist. And it'd be, you know, 3 days I'd be away. One time my missus said, can you go and get me some soup? I got a flu, and I didn't come back for 4 days. Anyway, so I said to John, I don't know which one's got the bomb in it. And he gave me the advice that stuck with me ever since. I'm one of those rare breed that got the news and fit in, you know. Well, it didn't fit in. I didn't like it, but I knew that there was something that you had that I needed, and I was gonna be okay if I could get what you had. I didn't want to be like you. I just wanted to get what you had, if that makes sense. Because you really pissed me off. I judged you all and found you wanting, which is the paradox of the newcomer, right? Isn't it amazing? We all look at them and go, whew. And then they're looking at us going, oh, my God. How can I get away from this mob as quickly? But I just need what they've got, a little bit of what they've got, and then get the hell away. Those God botherers. Happy, joyous and free. But anyway, back, I digress again. John said to me, it's in the first one, mate. He said, the bomb is in the first one. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm telling you, I'm different and unique and special. You know, obviously you can see how good looking I am. Did I tell you how rich I am as well? And the wife I've got. It's not in the first one with me. Maybe with you, because you look like a loser. Sorry, John. And he said, no, mate, it's in the first one. And I said, well, no, because I can have the first one. I can have the first one a couple of times. I can have a wine with dinner. And I was that rare bod. I don't know if rare. I think there's a few of you nodding your heads. I could control it a little bit. I never enjoyed it when I controlled it, and I never could control it when I enjoyed it. And, you know, I could go that way, but then life would just build up on me, and every 5 to 6 weeks you could set your watch to it, I was going to go. And I'd get in the plane and go to Singapore or go to Bangkok and go somewhere to get away from my family, because I never drank at home. Didn't want the kids seeing me. All that kind of thing, you know. And I was the mayor. I always organized the party because, you know, you couldn't get it right. You'd always run out of stuff. I needed to arrange it because then we wouldn't run out. I knew where I could get it, so I always organised it. That's the kind of drunk I was, you know. And like the lady was saying, you could always hear me. I was that guy, you know, the incorrigible drunk. Long, curly hair, goatee, and had a pocket full of joints and, you know, hip flask of, you know, I had arrived. But I was insane. And, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous because none of anything that I can say from here comes from me. It's a funny situation because I get from you what I interpret and regurgitate back to you, and both of us feel better. I don't know, you know, what an amazing gift for us all. And to be in that stadium last night for me, you know, I was blubbering. I was crying like a baby because it was so overwhelming for me. It was, you know, one of the most overwhelming things that have happened in my life. And all I know is I'm coming to the next one. And, you know, thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Bill. We covered off Thailand and Australia in that one foul swoop. The lady down here, did you want to share? Yes, you. Bill broke the mic. Okay.
Hello, everybody. I'm Lexi. I'm an alcoholic. And my first meeting was in Hong Kong in Borat Road. I don't know if anyone is here from Hong Kong, but, you know, I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous all over the world. And, you know, I look at that one day that I came into that one meeting. I was living over there. My parents lived overseas, and I drank overseas. And I didn't think I was an alcoholic. The only thing that was going well, I thought, in my life was the fact that I could drink, because it was the only thing that made me happy. And I took a suggestion in Hong Kong to go to this meeting on Borat Road. I was 18 years old, and I was too young to be an alcoholic. And I didn't think I had reached a bottom enough to be an alcoholic. And the one day that I decided to go to the meeting was the Wednesday 7 p.m. Young People's Meeting at Borat Road. And so when I walked into that room, there were people that drank exactly like I did at the same bars that I did. They were my age. They didn't wreck cars either, because they didn't have them either, because you can't drive over there. And, you know, that one meeting, like, I didn't have – I had so many similarities. It was so blatantly obvious that I was an alcoholic. And I'm so truly grateful that that was the day I decided to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, had I come in the States, I might have thought I was too young. Had I come in a meeting where there wasn't, you know, I was so unique. I was so different, because I had lived all over the world. And, you know, I'd been a bar drinker since I was 15 years old. You know, you move a teenage alcoholic overseas, and, you know, it's heaven, you know, like, you can drink, you know, you can buy alcohol everywhere. And, you know, and so my drinking took off and escalated in Hong Kong and overseas. And I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in Hong Kong, so that when I was able to go back to the States to college, I had that message of hope that I truly could, that I was an alcoholic. Doesn't matter how old I was, or, you know, I hit my bottom. And then every time I would come back, I came back to Asia a lot to see my family. And there were so many times I didn't think I could stay sober overseas, because, you know, it was Hong Kong and I could drink, you know. I mean, at 20 years old, I'm still not legal in the U.S., but I would be in Hong Kong and I could drink, and there were all these bars everywhere. And how could I stay sober the whole 2 weeks I was going to be there, you know? And I'm coming to the meetings that I knew at Borat Road. And, you know, I share with the people, you know, I talked with the people at the meetings, and I told them how I was feeling. And and somebody brought this concept that I had heard a bazillion times at a meeting. You know, Lexi, you don't have to stay sober this whole 2 weeks. You just have to stay sober today. And it was like, oh, you know. And, you know, certain things like that, you know, there were so many turning points for me at that meeting. And then all the meetings that I've been to in any country I've visited, but you know, every time I've been to the World Conference, I've been sober since then, since July 11th, 1992. And I come to the World Conferences, and I always come to the Asia Room. In San Diego, I ran into some people I knew in Borat Road. But in Toronto, I hadn't recognized anybody. And it just reminds me that, you know, this is such a precious gift, and not everybody gets to stay. And, you know, people move. People, you know, people go to other places. But, you know, I want to stay, so I keep coming back. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Anybody else want to share? Yep. Where are you from?
Alberta, Canada.
Alberta, Canada. It's not in our zone, but welcome.
Hi, friends. My name's Alan. I'm an alcoholic. I drank in Japan for 10 years, and most of you like to go outside. I left Alberta in 84, and I did my first geographical to Australia, and I love that country, and if I ever get back, I owe some amends there. And my second home now is in Cebu in the Philippines, and I just wanted to let you guys know, if you're down in the Philippines, there is some excellent AA in the Philippines. You're going to want to go and see Jack. He's taking AA into the jail system there. And in the jail system in the Philippines, they have a problem, because they're on disco night. They're allowed two drinks. They're allowed two shots of rum. So the guys and the gals, because the prisons are sometimes together, and they have disco night on Saturday night, and they get a couple. It's crazy. But the AA is really, really good there. So, and I can't wait to get back. I do the half of the year, and, well, more than half, unfortunately, in Canada, and then I get to go warm up in the Philippines. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love you guys. Thank you very much.
Just like to, thanks for that. I'd like to ask Shirley from Australia if you could close the meeting for us.
I'm Shirley, I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for the welcome. I haven't needed a drink today, and I know what I did last night. And my sobriety date is the 1st of July, 1979. And it's just been a wonderful thing to have celebrated here in the US this year. And they gave me a cake with carrots on it, and it was just the most precious gift. My current service position is as the Asia-Oceania Service Meeting Secretary, and I help coordinate our wonderful dedicated delegates to come together in one spot once every 2 years. Last year it was in Bangkok. Bangkok hosted this meeting, and we had 19 delegates from... No, we had 25 delegates from 19 countries in the Asia region. And that is just showing the growth of AA in this particular region. The next one is in Chandigarh. Sunil is in control of that one, hopefully. And and we're all looking forward to that. It's a 4-year term that I do, and I have just been so blown away by working with delegates that sometimes their English is a little bit... you know, behind hand, but they try. And I get the most amazing emails from Maseo, very short ones and very cryptic, but understandable. And my little office in Australia is in my home, and I sit there and I make contact with these delegates who are out in the field trying to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's just an absolute delight. We have new delegates this year coming in from, or for next year, I should say, from Russia. We have two new delegates, and we have a delegate from the United Arab Emirates. We have two delegates that came to last year's Asia-Oceania Service Meeting from Bhutan, and they were sponsored by the Australian Fellowship. Well, one was. The other one was sponsored by the Asia-Oceania Service Meeting itself. We are supported by, it's an autonomous body, it's supported by the GSOs of New Zealand, Australia, Japan, and by the private contributions of good members who send money along to help carry the message in this Asia region. And we just held our national convention in Coffs Harbour this year, and the Australian Fellowship brought in a member from the Solomon Islands, and I don't think he'd been out of the Solomon Islands before, but he was just so grateful to be there. And he shared with us on a couple of occasions that he was trying his best to carry the message into prisons and into into his community. But he was a little bit shy of a laptop. And when he went home, he had 4 laptops to take. And he is just a great communicator. My job basically is to help the delegates to come together. I also put out a where to find directory for the whole of the Asia zone, and I put out a newsletter. And anybody that's in these countries in the Asia zone, there's there's the China People's Republic of China, there's Hong Kong, there's Vietnam, Philippines. There is India and all these others around the top end. And then, of course, there's New Zealand and all of the Micronesia and Melanesia islands as well. And we have a lot of work to do. And, and I just am blown away, as I said, by the delegates who represent these countries are trying their very best with very limited resources sometimes. And, the literature is their main problem. The Bhutanese, before they came down to the meeting last year, were telling their story of how they used to meet in a car because they couldn't afford a room to meet in. But now they have a room, and they're going great guns. So with the help of the AA World Services here in New York, They've been providing them literature, and you know, this is how we do it. So thanks for being here. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank you all for coming today. We're going to close the meeting now. I just want to say, if you're ever in Wellington, New Zealand, you can come to my home group on a Wednesday night, Steps and Traditions. You'll be very welcome. And could you help me close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, please?